You're listening to a special two-hour edition of Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. In this part of our show, we return to UW-La Crosse for a political debate presented October 9th featuring the candidates in Wisconsin's 94th State Assembly District, representing all of La Crosse County except for the city of La Crosse and French Island. The candidates are incumbent Democrat Steve Doyle of Onalaska and Republican challenger Bruce Evers of Holman. They have 3 minutes each for their opening statements, and then we'll take questions from a panel of reporters and the audience, during which time they'll each have a minute and a half to address those questions. The moderator, UW-La Crosse political science professor Joe Heim.
Incumbent Steve Doyle, to my right and your left, and I don't know if that's politically correct one way or the other. I always wonder about those things. He is a former chair of La Crosse County Board. Steve won his seat about a year and a half ago in a special election in 2011, if I remember correctly. His challenger on my left is Bruce Evers. He's a businessman from Holman. We flipped a coin, and Bruce is going to go first. At the conclusion, we'll reverse that order. So right ahead, Bruce, go right ahead.
Appreciate it. Thank you very, very much for being here tonight. I want to thank the sponsors of our event. It's important for us to have these debates to express our opinions and ideas. And the questions we get will certainly open up some of the eyes of the people and know who we are as candidates. I want to acknowledge my wife of 45 years. In November, we'll be married 45 years. We've been together 49 years and in 8 days. So I was blessed with a life partner, and I'm very fortunate in that regard. And she supports me like it's unbelievable. I am a small businessman from Holman, Wisconsin. I've been in the financial industry for 42 years. During the course of those years, as you can imagine, I've learned and have seen the roller coaster rides of our economy and all the things that affect us as individuals in our workplace and our personal lives. And what precipitated me to decide to run for office again. I did run for Congress 2 years ago. I did that for a very specific reason. I wanted to learn how it works. And I did. But the point is, today I'm looking at our economies, the things that are affecting our kids, my grandchildren, and we need to start resolving some of the issues that we face. We have to do it with true honesty and integrity. We need to bring to the floor of the Assembly in Madison and to all legislative bodies an air of responsibility. You'll hear tonight things like bipartisanship, all those things that are always great to hear. We know that over the course of the last year and a half, 2 years, there's been a great deal of turmoil here in the state of Wisconsin. I think I was annoyed and angered by that as much as anybody. Civility really needs to become the rule in how we govern, how we represent our constituents, how we purport their ideas, and help build their futures. So, I believe in the idea that we need to talk to each other. Bipartisanship to me is representing the constituents, because our constituents are made up of people from all sectors, Democrat, Republican, Independents, those that don't care but have an interest. So I think it's our responsibility to represent them in a way that we can achieve our goal as representatives, meet the objectives that we really need to meet, and move, if you will, and we use this word often, move our state forward. The steps are already in place. We need to continue the mission. And that's what I'm here to try to do for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Steve?
Thank you. I also want to thank the sponsors and thank the university for hosting this. When I ran for the State Assembly a year and a half ago, I didn't make a bunch of promises. I made one promise. And that promise was that I would go to Madison if I were elected, and I would work in a bipartisan fashion to try to get things done for the people of Western Wisconsin. And I kept that promise. I want to give you a couple of examples of how I kept that promise. First of all, over the course of the last legislative session, I had the opportunity to co-sponsor a number of bills, 88 to be exact, or 87. Of those 87 bills, 44 were Democratic bills, 43 were Republican bills. The reason I co-sponsored almost identical numbers of Democratic and Republican bills is that I don't care who has a good idea. If it's a good idea and it has a D after it or an R after it, doesn't matter to me. If it's a good idea, it's a good idea, and I want to be a part of that. The second example is a story that I want to tell of a bill that I had introduced originally. And it came from a constituent of mine who came up to me and said, you know, I just was told by my human relations department at work that my taxes are going to go up because I just put my 25-year-old daughter on my health insurance. And Wisconsin is the only state in the country that is going to charge me a tax for putting my daughter on my health insurance. I said, that doesn't seem right. I'll introduce a bill to try to change that. And I did. It was last August, I believe. About a month or so later, I got a call from a colleague of mine, a Republican from the other side of the state by the name of Pat Strakota. And Pat said to me, you know, Steve, I've been working on this same bill. It's a good idea that you've got. I'm 100% with you. But I've been working on this bill, and I want to introduce my own version of the bill. And I just wanted to give you a heads up. I'm not stealing your bill, but, you know, it is something that I've been working on, too. And I said, Pat, I'm a freshman member of the minority party. My bill's going nowhere. But your bill will pass because you're a well-respected veteran member of the legislature and you're a member of the majority party. I said, how about if we do this? If you'll put my name on as a co-sponsor of that bill, I'll work to get my party to support it, you work to get your party to support it, and we can get that bill passed. And that's exactly what happened. And she said, you know, I've been working with one of my colleagues in the Republican Party, and I promised him that he could be the second author on this, but how about put you as third? That's wonderful. I really appreciate that, and that's what she did. We testified one after another at the committee hearing. It went to the Assembly. It passed there on a 98-1 vote, passed the Senate on a unanimous vote, and is now the law. And that is an example of two parties working together. And what happened when it was being debated in the Assembly, she did something that she didn't have to do. She turned over to me and she said, I'd like to thank the gentleman from the 94th District for his work on this bill with me, and we did this together. And that made me very proud. And if I am reelected 28 days from now, I'm going to go back to Madison, and I'm going to do exactly the same type of thing that I did the last year and a half. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. We're now going to go to questions from the panel. Chris Tribune,
first question. One out of every five citizens in Wisconsin is on some sort of state medical program, Medicaid, Badger Care Plus, Senior Care, and Family Care. More than 1.2 million in Wisconsin are on Medicaid, and spending continues to dramatically increase. How do we find savings in this budget with more demand for services?
Well, that is the toughest nut of all that we have to crack in the state legislature, and it's also the toughest nut, obviously, at the federal level. I do support the idea of Wisconsin adopting our own version of Obamacare, because if we don't, we'll have to have the federal version of that to try to get people covered by the Affordable Care Act. I'm a little bit concerned in that respect that the Walker administration, at least publicly, has said, we're waiting until after the election before we do anything on this issue. And the problem is that it's just several days after the election that the first deadline at the federal level kicks in. So I do hope that they are working behind the scenes and that, you know, it's fine if they, you know, want to take that particular approach publicly. But I do hope that we get in and have the Wisconsin version rather than the one-size-fits-all version at the federal level. I also support things like what we've done in La Crosse County. We were one of the original pilot counties to adopt family care, which takes people who are otherwise receiving various benefits for certain types of care that we now put them into a pool, and we provided better services for them at a lower cost. That has saved a lot of money both for the county and statewide. So it's working together in those types of things that I think will ultimately allow us to save some money. There are other ideas that Gunderson Lutheran and Mayo have put forward that I think are really cutting edge in terms of quality over quantity that I think we really need to work together with the federal government to accomplish.
Well, I have a different view. When Steve talks about Obama's health care plan, we all know that in America that is very not well received. We have to look at, in my opinion, how we're going to manage these programs that we're going to be faced with. I keep hearing this idea that we're going to rely on the federal government. We're going to take money from the federal government. When you do that, there's strings attached. I'm suggesting to you that Medicare, Medicaid especially, in Wisconsin is going to become a huge problem. Funding it is going to be a very, very sincere effort on all of us. I will look at it and say to you that we need to start taking personal responsibility for what we do as citizens in this great country. We have to start planning for things, not relying on taxpayer dollars to fund everything we do. We're out of money in this country. We're out of money in the state. People are taxed. all of a sudden we start hearing from the other side of the aisle, if you will, let's call it what you will, this idea that we're going to do investments. Investments is spending money. So we hear these things all the time. We have to put in place, in my opinion, plans to fund these things through savings, looking for fraud and waste, and start putting away these monies in reserves to cover those things for us in the future. Reserves is what we have to start looking to do.
Thank you. Next question comes from Eleanor Aspero, League of Women Voters.
The DNR has refused to set many standards for the sand mining industry, specific air quality standards for those who live near there. And right now, the only option really would be the legislature. Would you support something in the legislature? And if you have any other concerns about frack sand mining, could you address those?
Well, I think that frack sanding is big business. There's no question about that. And I think it's going to continue for quite some time. And I think it's advantageous for us as Wisconsin citizens to allow it to move forward. I do think we have to also, though, look at the impact in our environment, which is important to all of us as well. I think when we start governing these things or managing or regulating or whatever you want to call it, I think we have to start using prudent regulation, saying how is it impact our environment? Is it positive? Is it negative? If we move ahead with it, how do we make it positive rather than the negative? When we start tying our businesses up in knots and regulations, things come to a standstill. Stop. Jobs quit. Stop. There's no employment for people. I think all the things that we're concerned about are environmental issues. We live in the greatest state in the union, in my opinion. And our environment here is incredible. I think all of us will say we want to keep that beauty. We want to keep that consistency where we can go out and enjoy our environment. Frack mining, from what I have a friend that has a frack mining farm. He's going to do it. But what these companies are doing is they're going to come back and put that land into a very pristine site for this guy. And the plans are on the table how to do that. We need to be careful how we regulate, but I think we need continuity in how we regulate them.
Thank you. Steve?
I do support the idea of making sure that those safety levels are met with regard to air quality. And, in fact, Senator Schilling and I had written a letter to the department at the request of our local health department here asking them to do a study on the possible dangers of silica in the air from frack sand mining, and we were turned down. We thought it was a great idea, it would answer some questions, but the department decided that that was not something that they wanted to do. So I think that by way of legislation, we should do that. On the more general issue of frack sand mining, I'm going to go back for just a minute to my tenure as county board chair in La Crosse and talk about why frack sand mining in La Crosse, when it happens, assuming that it does happen, is going to be different than elsewhere. Because we have countywide zoning in La Crosse, we have a better ability to make sure of that people like who Bruce referred to, that when their land is done being mined, that it is put back into the appropriate condition, because we have the ability with our countywide zoning to require things like remediation bonds, to require things like surcharges for extra highway use, limits on the number of vehicles, limits on the how many hours a day, and many of those operations, by the way, run 24 hours a day, and sometimes 100 trucks every couple of hours. And so we have the ability in La Crosse County to do a lot of things that people in other counties are concerned about. So I think when it gets to La Crosse County, it is going to be somewhat different than it is in some of the other areas. But I do think that at the state level, looking at the air quality issue is extremely important.
Thanks, Steve. Next question will go to Steve, and it's from Dave Soli of WXOW.
In the courts, excuse me right now, Steve, but for both of you, of course, what would you like to see happen with collective bargaining among public employees?
Well, I think that what happened last year when I talked to people with regard to collective bargaining is a situation where people have said, I didn't disagree with the goal that the governor had, which is to get the budget back under control. They disagreed with the methodology that he used and the fact that he could have stopped before he did. And that's really where I'm at, too, that, it was not necessary to essentially basically wipe out the unions to accomplish what the governor wanted to accomplish. If people will recall last year, the unions initially started out saying, we're opposed to these changes, we're opposed to the cuts in our benefits and so forth. Later on they said, okay, we'll live with those, but just don't wipe us out. And the governor said, well, sorry, we don't have any choice, we don't have any bargaining ability, we're going to need to do what he ultimately did. I would like to go back to that step right before where we accomplished the reductions that the unions agreed to live with, but we still preserve the integrity of the unions. And I say that because I saw how it works at La Crosse County. I was a member of our bargaining committee before I became county board chair, and I worked with the unions on a day-to-day basis. And then once I became county board chair, I also worked with them all the time, and they actually helped us in a lot of situations where we had perhaps an employee that wasn't doing what he or she should have been doing. They helped us find ways to save money. They, as a group, would give back sick days and other benefits. And so you can have a very favorable relationship between employer and employee in the right environment. And that's where we need to get back to.
Thank you, Steve. Bruce?
Well, I was asked a question earlier today, you know, would you turn back the clock? And I absolutely would not turn back the clock. I think that when I went out and got my nomination signatures to get on the ballot, in my neighborhood alone, there was 16 teacher households. Out of the 16 teacher households, 14 of them signed my nomination papers. Because I sat down with them, or visited with them, and said, I asked them the question, I said, are you a great teacher? Of course, their response was, absolutely. I said, did you really lose anything under the Act 10 provisions? Did you really lose anything? You already agreed to paying portion of your retirement. You already agreed to paying portion of your health care. And then they said, I said, so what did you really give up? And you know what? The answer was the same. Well, really, not that much. They gave up the idea that, you know, can we collect the bargain for wages? That's not prohibitive under that law. To a certain limitation, it is. However, when we start looking at the big teachers, big picture, we want teachers that teach our children and teach them well. If we have bad teachers in our system, they need to be doing something else. Act 10 gave us the opportunity to review and study these teachers, look at who they are, and have them be responsible to their professional responsibilities. Our kids need the best, and we should expect that as taxpayers.
Okay, next question comes from, Mark McPherson, WKBT.
Thanks, Joe. I want to get to jobs in this debate, but this question is also a little bit about working together. Both of you have said you worked together to try to bring the assembly together in a time that's been difficult, so I'm going to make you prove it. Can you name a bill or initiative that would help create jobs in the state of Wisconsin that's largely supported by the other party that you're willing to support with your vote as well?
I can't think of one off the top of my head, and this is an honest answer for you, okay? But I will tell you this. If we are going to move forward with that kind of an idea, we have to sit down and create the dialogues that will provide us with many options as we make decisions as legislators, not just one. So if the person sitting over here says, I got a great idea, well, we need to explore that idea. Then we have to listen to all of these input ideas and come up with, as we say, load them into the funnel, and what comes out the end is positive for all of us, not just part of us. And I think our responsibilities as representatives of people, we have a fiduciary responsibility. You know what that word fiduciary means? I use it in my business. When I make decisions, I have to take only the interest of my clients to heart. Only decision I can help them make is what's in their best interest. As legislators, we have the same responsibility, looking for the best ideas, coming up with solutions, and putting those solutions in play, because we're looking to the future, because the things at stake is jobs, is an example. We're hurting. Well, you can look at the paper, and I said that this morning when I was visiting with some folks from the Trib. You know, we have jobs in the paper. People don't necessarily want those jobs, because they're looking for better paying jobs. The point is this. We're going to get better paying jobs when we become responsive to the business community, saying, these are the things we can do. We're going to get government out of the way, help you, not fight you.
Your question is a great one, making us go past talking points and slogans, and I'm going to give you two bills that I would support. Number one is Senate Bill 201 that was introduced by Senator Van Wongard from the Racine area. That is a bill that provides for an income and franchise tax credit for hiring unemployed individuals. It provides for $5,000 tax credits up to $250,000 for hiring unemployed Wisconsin workers. I mean, that is a jobs bill that is a Republican bill that I think makes great sense. I support that 100%. Second bill, because in politics I can only not just give one answer, I have to give multiple answers, is my bill. The bill that I introduced last year that was a bipartisan bill, doesn't fit in your definition of mainly a Republican bill, but my bill that would change the definition that we have for the Workforce Advancement Training Grant Program that came from our Western Technical College people here who said, we got this great program, it's fully funded, We can use it to give money to people who are dislocated workers who are looking for a job, to give them some training to get them job ready right now. It doesn't cost a lot of money as it is, but the problem is that we're training them and there aren't jobs available. If we can use that money to apply to our businesses that will allow them to retool and expand their market, then we can take those workers and put them into the jobs that are now available. That bill passed, that was my bill, it passed on a unanimous vote in the committee, didn't quite make it through the legislative process. I'm introducing that bill the day I get reelected.
Thanks, Steve.
Can I rebut that for just a second?
Right ahead.
We keep hearing the word grants and tax credits. We keep hearing that all the time, especially from Steve. Grants are monies that come from somebody, i.e. the taxpayers, generally speaking. Tax credits are effective on our taxes of all of us. We need to get out of this mentality that we need investments, grants, tax credits. We need to get out of the way of business. Let business develop and grow, and these jobs will be available without grants and credits. They want to grow their business and be profitable.
Okay, thank you.
Can I then follow up?
Go right ahead. 30 seconds.
Thank you. My bill does not cost any additional money. That money's already there. I'm not talking about spending an extra dime. Secondly, I have not talked to a single business person who said, tax credits, I don't want those. Every business person I've talked to said, yeah, be happy to do that. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you. Next question goes to Steve, come from Steve Eisen, WLSU.
Before we did this debate, I went around and actually did man in the street sort of interviews with voters to see what was on their mind. And one question is this, and I thought it was a fascinating one. What impacts or will impact your decisions more, constituents or your fellow lawmakers? And how do you go prioritizing the two?
Well, for me, that's an easy one, my constituents. And I have the proof of reaching out to the constituents. Since January of this year, I have knocked on over 6,000 doors. I have talked to people all over my district, asking them what's on their mind, finding out what issues are of main concern to them. I have talked to people out in the rural part of La Crosse County that have said to me, many of them, I have never seen an elected official at my door before. Thank you very much for coming out to visit me. My answer to that was very simple. It's my job. I mean, that's what I should be doing. Those are the people who will put me in office, and those are the people who could take me out of office if I'm not responsive to them. So, I mean, I do want to work with my fellow lawmakers, but my job is to represent my constituents. But you can do that in a bipartisan fashion, because what the constituents are telling me is, here's our goal. And there's various ways to get to that goal. You can do it by saying my way or the highway and not be bipartisan, or you can say, let's work together and get things done. But that is the message I hear more often than any other message in terms of when I ask people what's on your mind. They say, we just want you to work together. We just want cooperation. We just want bipartisanship. And the other thing that they say to me is, thank you, Steve, because we know you're doing that.
Thank you, Steve. Bruce?
The constituents are number one. They are our boss. But let me set the record straight on bipartisanship, where Steve keeps bringing it up at every meeting we've been at. Pastor Cota, I talked to Pastor Cota for the second time yesterday about the bill that he was talking about. That bill was in place long before Steve got there. The bill was, we were the last state in the union to pass it. It passed 98-1. It's hard not to be bipartisan when you have a bill that's absolutely going to pass, regardless of what your input is. We have to look at the facts, okay? The facts are simple. I'm not saying that Steve's not bipartisan, but I'm saying you have to look at the issues and the facts and how you relate to them. When we talk about constituency, I asked the same questions, and I've knocked on many, probably the same doors that he has. Probably hear the same questions, the same inquiries of us. What are you going to do different? How are you going to represent us? I said, I'm going to go down there, and I'm going to represent your interest and your interest only. I'm running as a Republican because I'm a conservative and I have conservative values. I'm pro-life, pro-gun, pro-business. Simple to me. It's not an intriguing conversation. I will do everything I can to build and help businesses grow in the state so we all gain the advantage. That's what we do for constituents.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse and a UW La Crosse-sponsored debate featuring the candidates in Wisconsin's 94th Assembly District, incumbent Democrat Steve Doyle of Onalaska and Republican challenger Bruce Evers of Holman.
Next question is going to come from the audience. Both the technical schools and the universities had significant budget cuts over the last 2 years. Do you support restoring funds to the technical colleges and universities to bridge the skill gap? And that'll go to Bruce.
I think it's really important, and I am a VOTEC advocate like you can't believe, and the reason is because I went to VOTEC. I don't have a college degree, but I went to VOTEC under the GI Bill. All my stuff was focused on finance when I was doing that. I was a young banker. Everything I did was to learn how to be the best banker I possibly could be. And I did that in the VOTEC system, and I ended up teaching in the VOTEC system because I think it's so incredibly important for our young people. The university system has another part to play in this because they take you to that next level. The next level is where you have substantial careers in business. You could go on to be an attorney, a doctor, an engineer, all of those things. The secondary education is also very, very important. Funding them is going to get to be more and more difficult because the dollars aren't there. But again, I'm going to take you back to what I said earlier, personal responsibility. I help people in my financial company plan for their children's educations. There's ways to use the tools that are there to help them do that. They can use those monies that they put into these plans tax-free. There are distinct advantages. So what I'm saying is that we need to not only support and defend our institutions to the best of our ability, but we have to start engaging the people with personal responsibility. It's very, very important to us.
Thanks, Bruce. Steve?
So, Bruce, do you support restoring the funding?
If you're asking about raising taxes, no.
Okay. I taught in the university system. I taught here at UW-Olin in the political science department for 22 years before I got elected to the state assembly. And I know the value of an education, and I know how important it is to our economy. And Bruce gives me a hard time all the time when I use the word investment. But let me talk about an investment that our government made in me a number of years ago. My parents are here tonight, and they have been hard workers all their lives. But being good Catholics, they had six kids. And you can't send six kids to college very easily. So I got some assistance with student loans and student grants. And I think, had I not had the opportunity to do that, I would be working a minimum wage job somewhere. But I believe, thanks to the assistance of the government in getting investment in me, I have been able to repay that to my community many times over through, you know, more taxes that I'm paying because of a higher income, but also because of my involvement in the community that was made possible by the virtue of the education that I received. So I am 100% in support of maintaining funding at the university and the tech schools and restoring the funding to where we were before. But I also want to look at better ways of getting the system working. And I was appointed to the special study committee on the university system to look at exactly those things. And we made a number of recommendations that are in the process of being implemented at this point to make us a more efficient and a more effective university system in Wisconsin.
Okay, thank
you. Can I rebut one time?
Go right ahead.
Again, Steve knows, and I'm going to deal with him on this idea of investments. The government is not in a place to invest in anything. They're taxpayer dollars. They have the responsibility to use those dollars prudently, not frugally. Steve, if he wanted his education, he'd have got it. If he really wanted to be an attorney, he'd have got it with or without grants. He would have done it. If not, you don't have the desire that I had.
Next question.
Well, I'd like to respond on that comment of investments.
15 seconds.
You bet. If we don't invest in roads, we don't get products from the farm to the market. If we don't invest in schools, we don't get kids who can be in the workforce competing with China and India and all those other places around the world. I am not afraid to say we need to invest in people.
Roads and education are different.
Next question comes from the Tribune's Chris Hardy.
This is somewhat related to the previous question. In 2011, Wisconsin spent more on prisons and corrections than on the University of Wisconsin system. 20 years ago, corrections received a quarter of the funds that the UW system received, yet during that time, our prison population went from under 7,000 to more than 22,000. How do you prioritize between corrections and education as a legislator?
Who's up? Steve is up?
Steve.
Okay. This is an area that I have some expertise, the criminal justice system, not as a participant, but as a person involved in managing it in La Crosse County. We in La Crosse County have been a model for how we maintain criminal justice compared to the rest of the state. And we follow a model that's used in Minnesota. Minnesota, they spend about half as much money on their correction system as we do in Wisconsin. They incarcerate about a third to a half of the people compared to Wisconsin. When you go across the Blue Bridge to La Crescent, do you feel unsafe? You shouldn't, because their demographics and their crime rate is almost identical to Wisconsin's. But we spend twice as much as they do to get the job done. So what I propose is that we look at the community corrections approach that they use in Minnesota and adopt that in Wisconsin. We have done things in La Crosse County that, as I said, are a model for the Midwest. We have people coming to La Crosse County to say, how do you do drug court? How do you do OWI court? Our repeat offense drunk driver program, by the way, has resulted in a study was done about 3 years ago that showed that we have the lowest rate in the entire state of repeat offense drunk drivers. Our program's working, and we're saving money doing it. So that's what I would do. If we change the way that we do criminal justice in Wisconsin, we will save millions of dollars that, guess what, they can be used for schools, and that's what we should be doing.
Bruce?
My son works in the prison system, so I know this firsthand. If I told you some of the stories that he told me about some of the prisoners that are in the prison system in Boscobel, Wisconsin, you'd probably be nauseated. I hope that Steve's not suggesting that we turn these people loose on the streets because they're murderers, rapists, and all the other things. I'm not finished yet, Steve. But the key is that we need to start weighing these ideas on saying, can we turn people loose on the street as criminals? What's the recidivism? What happens to these people? Education is paramount. There's no question about that. But you can't balance education versus the prison system. They're two different things. We have criminals in our system. We can't control them. We have to incarcerate them for protection of our citizens. It's our responsibility. We have to find other ways to take care of our education system. Is there overspending and fraud perhaps in the prison system? There may be. If there is, let's find it. Let's correct it. My son does not make a lot of money in the prison system. He doesn't. He does his job, and he does it well. The turnover rate's incredible. So when you start comparing education to the correction system, it's a hard one to do because they're completely different.
I'd like to respond.
Brief but.
I'm certainly not advocating letting murderers and rapists go. I'm talking about other people. And by the way, people that are brought into our criminal justice system, you know what happens to them? They get out, and they're your neighbors. So we want to make sure that we fix them when they're in our criminal justice system. The guy that breaks into the house down the street and goes to jail for 6 months, he comes out and he moves into your neighborhood. And if we haven't fixed his problem, he's going to do it again. That's what I'm talking about. That's how we do it in La Crosse County, and that's where we can save money and make our community safer.
Next question goes to Bruce, comes from Ellen Rossboro.
All the exciting topics have been taken. Wisconsin has long had a tradition of open, transparent government. Do you believe that the tradition should be continued in every branch of government? And what, if any, exceptions should be made to the open meetings and open records laws?
I think that we should have a transparent government. They represent us at every level. There should be no closed-door sessions when it comes to making decisions about how it impacts us. Should be no doors closed. If we need to get information to the public, we should educate them on those ideas and what we're trying to do. I think it's an impairment if we don't. Again, I come back to the responsibility that legislators and our government has to us. It's just simple to me. They represent us. Therefore, they should keep us informed, keep us abreast of what decisions are happening through the process of the media, as an example. We need to have open and transparent government at all levels. I don't care what sector it is.
Steve?
I agree that we need to have open government, and as an attorney representing one of the towns in La Crosse County, I'm called upon on a regular basis to answer the question of what we can do and what we cannot do. And I think that the idea of the law where you should assume it's open unless you can come up with a dang good reason why it's not is a good one. But it also needs to be expanded to apply not just to the typical governmental entities, the school boards and the county board. It should also apply to the quasi-governmental entities, and it should apply to the Wisconsin State Legislature. Yes. But it doesn't right now. We make the laws and we don't follow them. That is wrong, and that needs to be changed.
Okay, thank you.
Court system.
I think the court system, too, in fact, what has been going on in our Wisconsin Supreme Court is really sad because of the fact that, a couple of decades ago, our courts in Wisconsin, our Supreme Court was the model of the nation. We were the cream of the crop, and we're a laughingstock these days. And I think shedding some light on the operations, not in terms of deciding a case, but in deciding the administrative things, that should be open. They shouldn't be above the law.
Dave Sully, next question.
I agree with the idea of the court systems as well. No question about it.
Dave?
Mr. Doyle, I'll start with you. If you are reelected, what's your first order of business?
My first order of business is to continue what I had been doing, which is working with members of both parties to try to get things done. And I want to change the tone in Madison. And my party is just as much at fault as the other party in terms of the bad feelings. And it needs to change, and it basically has to start at home. The first order of business when we go to Madison a week after the election is to elect our leadership and to talk about what the upcoming session is going to be. And my number one message is going to be, when you folks were out knocking on doors and you were talking to people at parades and so forth, what did you hear? You heard them say, we want you to work together. We want to have a tone of civility, and let's remember that. Because otherwise, we're going to be the minority party, and we're going to be the minority party forever and ever and ever. So that's the first thing I want to do. The second thing I want to do is to work on job creation and improving our economy. As I said, the jobs bill that I had introduced that didn't quite make it through, I want to do that as my first bill that I introduce in this next session. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. We left a lot of things on the table when we adjourned at, believe it or not, at the end of March of this year. We're not in session for 8-9 months, but we're still getting paid for it. I think that those things that were left on the table, venture capital, an acceptable bipartisan mining bill, we need to look at those types of things. And they can be done together. And I'm hoping that people got the message in this election that the voters are expecting us to work together.
Bruce?
I've talked to a lot of the legislating people, the assembly people that are down there already. I had a pretty extensive meeting with those folks. And I think that the sentiment is the same, at least from the Republican side, that we need to start being advocates of things that are in the best interest of our constituents. I heard that over and over and over. I think that, some of the experiences that we went through a year and a half, 2 years ago, left a very bitter taste in a lot of people's mouth, constituents as well. And I think the response that I get from them is say, we do not ever need to go back there, ever go back there. We need to start figuring out, I hear this from people, including the legislators I talked to, we need to keep the focus and our eye on the ball, making the best decisions we can for the citizens of this great state of Wisconsin. And again, I don't look at it as a party idea. This is not about Republicans and Democrats. This is about Americans. The sooner we start thinking like Americans, we will start coming up with the things that are in the best interest of us as Americans. And so when I wake up in the morning, I don't say, hey, there's a great ugly Democrat or Republican. That has no meaning to me. What means something to me is that we have a constitution, the greatest country in the world. We need to fight for it. When we fight, we have to fight together in coordination.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from Mark McPherson.
It seems like since 2008, every time you turn around, there's another election going on. Do either one of you support recall reform? And if so, what would it look like? And if not, why not?
I think we need recall reform. I think Steve voted against that last time he was there. We need to start looking at the voters in our great state have recall ability. They can throw you out of office. That's recall to me. But when we start recalling people because they vote the wrong way or we don't like the way they wear their clothes or whatever it might be, we need to get out of that mentality. We need, if somebody violates the law, it violates their oath of office, those kinds of things should be recallable. If they're in violation of statutory law, malfeasance, whatever you do, we have to start looking at it from a realistic standpoint. But if you're doing your job, and just because you disagree with somebody, that should never be a reason to recall somebody. Never.
Steve?
Wisconsin has one of the most restrictive recall statutes in the country, and it is not easy. You have to get a lot of signatures. You have to go through a lot to accomplish a recall. I think, quite honestly, we don't need any significant changes because, first of all, I don't think we're going to see a statewide recall or even a legislative recall in the foreseeable future. I mean, that turned out to be a disaster from all sides, and I just don't see it as a major issue coming up. We have more important things to deal with right now in terms of jobs and economy and health care and all of those issues. So I'm not going to focus a lot of time on that particular issue. If a bill comes up, I'll look at it to see if it tweaks and maybe give a little better definition of what you know, the wrongdoing is that you can recall a person on. But I would not want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because I think that if a person isn't doing what the voters want, that's what democracy is all about. And, you know, we find a person who is going to do what the voters want.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Rison, next question.
How do you go about balancing tighter government spending or budget cuts with the needs of those who depend on funding, the poor, the mentally ill, the homeless, those who may not be able to take care of themselves?
Steve.
That's where I call upon my experience in local government. You know, I like to talk about the fact that La Crosse County has the fifth lowest property taxes per capita out of all 72 counties in the state of Wisconsin. I'm very proud of that fact, and the fact that we were able to do that while providing quality services in La Crosse County. And the way that you do that is by thinking outside of the box, to use the old cliche. In La Crosse County, as I said, we have done a lot of things that are cutting edge in our criminal justice area, in our health and human services area. We were one of the original seven pilot counties for family care, which, as I said earlier, has saved thousands and thousands of dollars for both state and local taxpayers. So you need to come up with new and more efficient ways of getting the job done, because first of all, there's no support out there to raise taxes. I mean, you could say, yeah, we'll bring in more revenue to solve these various problems, but you're just not going to get the support in the legislature. So what you need to do is come up with a different way of doing the same thing and doing it better. And I think in La Crosse County, we have been a model for doing that. I always tell people that, you know, when we in the county go to Wisconsin Counties Association conferences, we don't learn anything. And the reason is we're the presenters. People come to see what we're doing in La Crosse County because we get it. We understand innovation. We understand trying new ways and not quitting until you get it right, which is basically never. You just keep going and trying new and new things. And that's what we have to do at the state level. That's one of the main reasons why I ran for the state assembly, is because I thought that La Crosse County is in very good hands. I see my successor, Tara Johnson, the current county board chair, is here. And we're doing things well here. We now need to do the same thing at the state level.
Thank you, Steve. Bruce?
We always need a safety net for those that are unfortunate in this country. I think that's been our history from our very beginning. You know, when I grew up poor, you know, and I didn't know any better because we were all poor. You know, we all worked hard. We all tried to help each other. Welfare was not an option in our world when I grew up. As a general statement, it was not. And again, I look at it and say, how do we make things better for those that are less fortunate? We have to provide them with opportunities as well to do better. If they can work, we should ask them to work. And in some cases, maybe it has to be a mandate. I'm not sure about that. But we sure have to give them the opportunity to make themselves better, to get themselves out of that. Do you think for 1 minute that anybody wants to stay in the hole their whole life? Most people would never choose that route in their life. We need to help them get there through education, assistance if we need to. But we also have to draw the line and say there has to come a point where you have to take personal responsibility for some of these things. If it's disabilities, that's a different issue all by itself. Those that are disabled, we need to assist them and help them, provide for a better quality life for them. You know, it's often said Republicans or conservatives don't have a heart. I got news for people. We have a heart. We have families. We have families where we have some of these people that are suffering that. So we have to look at the safety nets. But we have to do it in such a way as we can look at it, plan for it, and put those programs in place that we can handle.
Okay, we're now going to move into the last question from the audience, and I'd ask you to do one-minute answers, please. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that there is voter fraud in Wisconsin on a scale that justifies voter ID? Generally, what are your thoughts about voter ID, especially when it comes to students? Bruce?
Well, I think we need voter ID. I mean, we need an ID to do just about everything we do in life. I hear this disenfranchisement. Voter IDs are free. The voting the votes that we have as citizens of this country are one of the most important things we do as a citizen, one of the most important things we do. I think that we should know who those people are. I don't think that voter fraud is necessarily rampant, especially in the Cross area. I don't know of anything here that I've ever heard of. But I'm suggesting that there are places in our state where there may be some issues with that. Voter ID is very simple to me. Just say who you are. An ID is free. Go vote, express your opinion, and move on.
Steve?
We had spent generations trying to make it easier for people to vote, whether they were African-Americans or women or people under age 21. And now suddenly within the last couple of years, we've decided that that's not what we wanted to do, and that's wrong. When you look at the various rights that we have, we talk a lot about freedom of speech. And when we say that it is more important for us to make sure that a corporation can exercise its freedom of speech by giving an anonymous donation to an organization that's going to run attack ads against a person who is running for office, is that being more important than allowing a person the right to vote? That's wrong. That's the wrong priority. There is not voter fraud because the studies in every state that has looked at it so far has found minuscule examples of that. And when there has been voter fraud, it's people who have been voting with a felony conviction. It doesn't say felon on your driver's license, by the way. You're not solving that problem by that. But the IDs are not free. Not for a person who is homebound and lives in a rural area and has to go to the DOT station 60 miles away every other Thursday to get her ID to be able to vote. That's not free for her. That's not allowing her to vote. We're not talking about renting movies. We're talking about voting, which is one of your basic rights, and I think that it's a shame that we've moved in the direction to make it more difficult for people, whether it's students or whether it's older people.
Thank you, Steve. We're now going to move into closing statements, 2 minutes each. First to go is Steve Doyle.
I received one of the highest compliments of my political career a couple weeks ago when a person came up to me and said, you know, Steve, you were bipartisan before it was fashionable. And I really thought that meant a lot, because it really was something that I think defines me. One of the things I did not talk much about tonight is my other half of my life, which is the business person. I run my own business. I'm a lawyer. But as a great part of my business, I do mediation, trying to bring both sides together to reach an agreement, whether it's a divorce or it's a lawsuit or whatever the case may be, to try to get people to work together and each get something. I took that experience as a lawyer, as a mediator, to my job as county board chair, where I worked with other entities, whether it was helping to create 300 jobs out at the Lakeview Business Park by working with the Village of West Salem, working with the La Crosse Area Development Corporation, our utilities, and private businesses to create that business park out there that had been talked about for two or three decades with nothing happening until we got around to doing that. I did that in working with all of our municipalities to create the Household Hazardous Materials Program that's been a great success in La Crosse. Because bipartisanship is simply a subset of collaboration and cooperation. And I took what I learned in the private sector and as a county board chair with me to Madison, and I said, I want to get people working together. I want to get people on the same page. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or if it's a Republican. If you have a good idea, if you're a good person, then we should listen to you and we should work together. And that's the message that I received when I ran for office and have been receiving this summer as I'm running for office again, people saying, we want you to continue doing that. And that is the same pledge that I made last time that I'm going to make this time. If I'm reelected in 28 days, I'm not making a bunch of promises. I'm making one. And that's the same one. I will go to Madison, and I will work in a bipartisan fashion for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Bruce?
I've been very blessed in my life and my career in the financial industry. I've shared experiences with some of the wealthiest people in the United States of America. I've learned from them. I've had the opportunity through the banking industry to help businesses through loans and advice to really literally create thousands and thousands of jobs. As I look at America today and I look at the state of Wisconsin, I say, why can't we continue to do that here? It's not about how effective the government is, because the government is only as effective as the people we send there to represent us. Being bipartisan should be something that should just not even be on the table. We have a responsibility to represent all the constituents. Bipartisanship should be automatic, not a badge of honor, It should be the way we conduct ourselves. It's called respect, mutual respect for those that we are working with in the legislature. Understanding that they have needs that they have to parlay into some kind of assistance for their constituents. It becomes a dialogue, a conversation. We're going to create an environment in Wisconsin through cooperative spirit, regardless of me or Steve Doyle. Because if we don't, we're going to fail. And I don't think Wisconsin or the nation is going to fail. I don't think we're going to fail because we care. Steve cares. I care. Every legislator down there cares. But you have to put away your ideologies and say, what is in the best interest of the people we represent? That's what makes America great. That's what makes Wisconsin even greater, in my opinion, by the nature of the people that we associate with and live with on a day-to-day basis. I'm proud to be a Wisconsinite, and I'm proud to be an American. And I think we have to take those values with us to Wisconsin, Madison. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce. On behalf of UWL and our co-sponsors, I'd like to thank Bruce Evers and Steve Doyle.
From the UW La Crosse campus, you've been listening to a political debate featuring the candidates in Wisconsin's 94th Assembly District, incumbent Democrat Steve Doyle of Onalaska and Republican challenger Bruce Evers of Holman. The winner of the November 6th election will represent most of La Crosse County, apart from the city of La Crosse and French Island. That debate was held October 9th. Thanks for joining us for this special two-hour edition of Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Maureen McCollum, Steve Reisom, Mary Meehan Stroop, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. Also a reminder that Newsmakers is on Facebook. Updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Follow us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook. Next time on Newsmakers, WPR's Maureen McCollum moderates a forum featuring the candidates in Wisconsin's 32nd State Senate District race, incumbent Democrat Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse, and Republican challenger Bill Feehan, also of La Crosse.